Hot Girls Code, a podcast all about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech. I'm your host, Autie.
And I'm your host, Lola. This week, we are lucky enough to have Tracy Morris on the show, who is an avid listener of Hot Girls Code, as well as one of the heads of engineering at New Zealand's largest auction and classifieds website, Trade Me.
Tracy has been in the IT industry since 1994, starting work as a support analyst and database developer, and more recently, leading large teams of engineers in IT service companies, banking, and now, Trade Me.
She is passionate about women in technology and women in technical leadership, which we are obsessed with. Tracy also recently doubled down on her purpose to increase the representation of women wherever decisions are being made, to lead towards a world where women's voices, stories, and lived experiences shape our future. Outside of work, Tracy loves to ski and mountain bike and also enjoys a local craft beer. So with that, let's get into the interview.
Welcome to the show, Tracy. We are so excited to have you join us.
Thanks, Autie and Lola.
So here at Hot Girls Code, we like to start off our interviews in a light and fun way with some carefully chosen icebreaker questions just to get to know you a little bit better. So before we dive into the crux of the episode and start talking about systemic change and smashing the patriarchy and all the other awesome things that we know you are passionate about, let's start off with something a little bit light.
So our first icebreaker question is something we're very curious about. Tracy, are you a dog or a cat person?
Oh my God, good question. I'm a cat person. My cat is called Bella and I love her. And she likes to wake me up at about 4:30 a.m. by standing on my chest and just softly, but with claws out, so she knows that, so that I know she's serious, she will just like pat my cheek so that I give her some love.
Oh my gosh, it's so precious.
How old is she?
She's about 7, but I think she's still got like a kitten heart. Oh, she still gets the zoomies and runs around the house and
Oh, that's so sweet. Second question, which chocolate do you take first out of a Cadbury's favourite box?
Oh, good question. Marshmallow, I think.
Interesting. Yeah,
with the caramel, you know, the caramel.
Yeah, like the pinky bar kind of.
So our next question is, what is your favourite way to get to work?
Good question. I like to ride my bike to work in Wellington. It's a beautiful day today and I actually ride through the tunnel because it's a commute bike, so it's not easy to get long distances, but I really enjoy it as a way to kind of start the day in an energised way and also finish the day, like shake off work and come home in a better headspace.
Do you do it in the rain as well?
I do, but I probably won't start in the rain, but if it rains when once I've started, I'll carry on. And I've got a rains jacket that's super long, and that keeps me dry.
Oh, that's good. And our final icebreaker question, what was the last book you read?
I read a book called Lessons in Chemistry. It's very light. It's fiction, and it's about a woman, I'm going to get the era wrong, but like, some time ago, who is sort of groundbreaking in her career as a chemist, but she's not taken seriously in that career, and so she ends up in a TV show doing cooking, but the cooking is very chemistry based and she's very serious about that. So kind of a feminist book, but super light and fun.
Ooh, I will add that to my to-read list. That sounds amazing. I'm someone that devours fiction books. I was actually telling my team that I think I've read almost 20 books so far this year, and most of them are fiction because I just keep going. I just keep reading. I love them so much.
Yeah, I love to read fiction. I actually made a discovery lately. I struggle to read workbooks, and I figured out that that's because they're all written by men and talk about metaphors that relate, they're more relatable for men, and I just kind of switch off.
That's so true, and I feel like that's something we feel very strongly about because we always make our metaphors very relevant to things that we like. Like just last week we were talking about IDEs and comparing it to a makeup kit.
There you go.
So now that we've broken the ice and we're feeling a bit more comfortable and we feel like we know you a lot better, Tracy, let's start talking more about your journey in tech, starting off with your current role. As we said in our intro, you work at TradeMe as a head of engineering, and we actually had another head of engineering on the show last year. But, you know, it's been a while, and, you know, there are so many roles out there in tech. I think a refresher is needed. So what exactly does a head of engineering do?
Yeah, I'd love to talk to that. That's Anna. She's amazing. I do the same role as Anna, but I do it for a different part of TradeMe. So, which is interesting because a head of should really be there is one, but actually it's a head of for each kind of business unit or department in TradeMe. So there are three of us. And we look after the software engineering teams that provide the part of TradeMe that for our customer segment. So the part that I work in is called Consumer Marketplace, and that is where you buy and sell new and used goods. I have about 50 engineers in my space, and I have direct reports that are a head of delivery, an engineering manager, and some development managers, so you can think of them as people leaders. I know that head of engineering means different things in different places, so in some places it's more junior, and in some places it's more senior. What I enjoy about the role is it's quite broad in terms of what you have to think about. So you need to think about how you deliver things and also how you code and good engineering practice.
That sounds like a pretty amazing role. Do you enjoy what you do?
I do. I love the role. I love that it covers both the build and also the operations of our products. It's my experience is in program management, so that tends to be just about delivery. So it's nice to be more operational and care about how healthy our systems are as well.
So both Auti and I have spoken before on the podcast about how we honestly had no idea that we wanted to work in tech until we started studying engineering at uni, and we were kind of exposed to coding outside of our previous experience, which was just Tumblr HTML code. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Tumblr, but that was our first experience. So we wanted to know, how did you know that you wanted to work in tech?
When I was at school and we did sixth form, which is year 12, it was kind of the year that you tried different subjects out. And so there was this subject called computer studies, and there was a little, it's like a little turtle that you had on a green screen that you coded to kind of, you know, move forwards four steps, move right two steps kind of thing. And then you could, over time, you could get more complex. So it would create kind of cool, shapes. And I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the mathematical side of it. And so I talked to my guidance counsellor about that, and she's like, yeah, you can do, here's a brochure, you can do programming or analyst programming. And so I was like, oh, that sounds good. And so that's kind of the inception of when I started to get interested in computers.
I love that. And I love that you still remember that it was a little turtle after all these years, like just that little detail. And I feel like something that I hear quite often from people nowadays is when they start with coding and programming is they really struggle because they don't get like an immediate visual reaction to what they're programming, which is why quite often when someone says that to me, you know, like I'm very visual and I struggle, I will say to them, maybe you should start with front end, and then when you have those concepts down, then you can pick up ones that are less immediately reactive. So clearly they need to go find, you know, a little turtle to program. So that is how you started off. We were wondering if now you could kind of walk us through the rest of your technical journey and your career as well, and what that kind of looked like.
Yeah, totally. So I made that decision early, and then I applied for teachers college and law school because, you know, nobody did computers, and so I was still even a little bit scared. Luckily, I didn't get into teachers college because I would have been a terrible teacher. I had zero patience. I did get into law school, but after a year, I didn't really like it. It was too much reading and so on. So I switched again to management studies, and then finally to information systems, and that's where I reconnected with computers. Just to give you a feel for the era that we're talking about, I didn't have a computer at home. Not many people did. Like, you need to have quite a bit of money to have a computer at home, so I would go into uni early, and we coded in COBOL, even though by that point COBOL was kind of out, like businesses were no longer using it. It was what the university asked us to study, and you would print it out like on dot matrix printers and big reams of paper, and then you would take that big ream of paper and debug it, like at home maybe, and then the next morning you'd come in and put your updated code into the computer, print that out and see whether it worked. So it was like a really inefficient process.
That must be crazy for you looking back now at just how far the tech industry has come, and you've been able to be there to see like so many changes.
Totally. But I do think when in my time, I remember guys typically talking to me about their early career with punch cards, and I was just like, eye roll, like, I hope you're not eye rolling now. But yeah, then after uni, I became a support analyst for FPOS or ETSA, it was called at the time, and then a database developer for Fisher & Paykel in their distribution division, which I really enjoyed. And I think on my first week I worked in the distribution division and they had a manufacturing line. And in my first week, I took down the manufacturing line through my code, which had some horrendous cost, like $1 million an hour or something like that. And, you know, they were like, oh, shouldn't do that. Just be a bit careful about what you release to production. Okay. And then a few days later, I did the same thing. But then I was there for a little bit longer and I did really enjoy it. And then I wanted to do my OE, so I went to London and was also, Ingress was the name of the language. I was also a database developer and DBA there. And that was kind of at the time when e-commerce was starting. We're like, what's this new fandangled thing? Anyway, that was enjoyable. After a few years in London, came back to New Zealand and again was a database developer working for what we would now call a startup, although that kind of wasn't even a word then. And their main clients were large accounting firms that did practice management software. So I implemented a few systems into large accounting firms, which meant that I got to travel and go back to London, business class this time.
Ooh, fancy.
My colleague who got to do the same thing came back with a deposit for his house, and I came back with just a whole lot of shopping.
Priorities, right?
Priorities, yeah. So that was really fun. And then moved on from there. I've always been good at organising things and people. So I moved more after that into project management, operational management. I'd often have lots of guys, older guys, working for me. And then after that, that was for a company called Simple, where I really loved. I moved to Datacom, so an IT services company. Working for the immigration MB or immigration services and in a program management role. So that was a large project, 150 people-ish, and it was really fun. And then BNZ, ANZ, and now TradeMe.
Wow, you've had such a long journey that's taken you so many places and through different roles and stuff. And just out of curiosity, very sorry to make you do maths so early in the morning, how long did you spend in technical roles before you moved into non-technical roles?
That's a really good question to ask, because I'd love to talk about that inflection point that people have. So I can't do the maths, but let's say 10 years of a 30-year career, which I know is a longer career than most people listening to this podcast have been alive. So I think probably around 10 years, and it's something that I've been reflecting on quite a lot lately, is when did that shift? Mm. So I was always good at maths, you know, sort of scholarship level, and then obviously an information systems degree, 10 years in working as a back-end developer. Why did I shift? Mm. And I've been pondering it quite a lot, and I think what I observe is in that time in London that I mentioned, I was in a team of about 25 people, something like that, and I was the only woman. And I remember my manager, who was amazing and actually organised a visa for me while I was there, just saying, oh, we were feral before you arrived. You've done such a good job of making us be more of a team, more social. And I was like, I think that was just a minute in time where somebody started to reinforce that I was good at organising people, team building, that type of thing, and reinforce that. And I do enjoy those things, but why did I, from that point forward, talk to myself and in interviews about not having a natural aptitude for coding? You know, nice. I could book learn, I could get the job done, but I didn't have that natural instinct for it. And I kind of ponder, why did I think that? Mm. And I think it might have been more just those unintentional encouragement towards something different.
That is very relatable to me right now because I started off in a technical role as a developer and then went in and did a more managerial role for a bit. And I totally felt that kind of, people were telling me I was so good at organizing things, I was so good at managing. And I thought, oh, well, I should do this route because I had that exact same feeling of like, oh, well, maybe I'm just not a natural. I don't have that, you know, natural aptitude for coding. So it's interesting that, you know, even despite the difference in years, I still felt like a very similar way. But now I've gone back to technical, which I'm very happy with, and I think you are too. I'm
also very happy that you've done that, Lola. I think it's, I don't want to belittle people that choose a different career path that I've had, the subsequent 20 years I've really enjoyed, and I've been able to lean into some of my strengths, which has been great. But I do think it's super important that if you enjoy technical work, you really consider carrying it on, and you will be a better technical leader if you have those skills that we just talked through. In fact, you can't really be a tech lead or a technical leader without them. So I would encourage you to really think about staying on that tech path. Absolutely lean into those things that you're good at that are non-technical. But stay technical because the world needs more women who are technical and making technical decisions. And I'm a bit worried about how much bias we're building into our products and our search engines these days. And we need diverse teams to correct that.
I love that. And that's something we've spoken previously on the show before about like coded bias and how, you know, with the uprising of AI, what is that going to mean if we don't have women in those technical roles?
Yeah, totally. There's actually a campaign. I don't know whether you've seen it, but it's really great if you've got people that you're trying to help to understand what it really means. It's called Correct the Internet. And it's a campaign that looks at, there's a film about a little girl, I think she's 8 years old, and she is asking the internet who, I think it's who scored the most football goals. And it comes back, I'm not going to remember the name, I think it's Ronaldo, it comes back to Ronaldo, and she's like, oh, but what about Christine Sinclair, I think it is? And the internet says, yes, she scored, I'm making up the numbers, but like 180, and Ronaldo scored 119 or something like that. Mm. She's like, oh, but that doesn't make sense. And that's kind of the point. So there's that default in there that the question was being asked about men's sport. And that, you extrapolate that out to everything.
So you worked as a back-end developer for about 10 years and then climbed your way up to being one of the heads of engineering at the largest auction and classifieds website in New Zealand. How do you feel that your technical experience has helped you kind of get you to where you are today and also helped you in your more leadership or non-technical roles?
Great question. I think what I am able to use is the ability to hold kind of spatially in my head complex things that are going on in my teams. So at any one time, I understand, so for probably about 10 years, I was managing large teams, so more than 100, and I would sort have a feeling for what everybody was doing at any given time, and then built kind of an instinct for where to dive into the detail. And I think that ability to see, you know, a code base is really complex, there's so much going on, and to be able to know where to dive in and spend more time is a skill that you build up by doing that sort of structured thinking. Another thing that I think is an important strength is the ability to apply critical thought and problem solving that you do through coding is an area where you have to do that. You have to kind of question what's going on here. And I think that's something that I carry all of the time is just question the assumptions.
I really love what you said there because I feel like quite often I talk to women who are entering the tech industry and they know they want to be leaders and they know they want to lead. And I love that you've highlighted that it's not only understanding the technical domains you're working in that's helpful, but also how the skills you develop through your technical experience help you lead better and how valuable they are, especially because, you know, we want more women leading technical spaces and leading technical discussions. So, yeah, I really love those answers that you gave. We now wanted to move on to a slightly different conversation and one that we know that you've been really keen on having in this interview. So one of the things we really, really admire about you, Tracy, is that you are a big advocate for making changes on a systemic level. And especially one of my personal favorite things is that you're really big about putting the burden of work not solely on the women, but also on the leaders and the systems that can actually enact big changes. And we were wondering if you could chat through why it's so important to you to put such an emphasis on systemic changes, and what does that even look like?
Yeah, so systemic changes is something that I care deeply about, because I observe individual women all of the time creating excuses and reasons for why they can't progress their career in tech or in technical leadership. And they're creating those reasons to help themselves feel more comfortable about a position that the system has put them in. So if I give you an example, I was talking to somebody recently and she was passed over for a promotion by a man. And she talked to me about, you could tell in her body language how she didn't feel good about that. And how she explained it is, I didn't want to join the competitive nature at that level. I couldn't spend the extra time, the weekends and the long hours. I couldn't add that extra pressure to my life. I've got a lot going on. I anyway would have been able to work with clients that I enjoy and give value to them without that title. So by the way, that's also without that pay, that recognition, that ability to progress your career, and all of those things are things about the system that we need to change. And that's just one example. There's many examples. Every day I hear a woman say, I didn't take that role because it wasn't the right time for me. We need to change the system. So we need to really look at what is sustainable in terms of work hours, as one example, and reducing those and reducing the expectation of people in business, all business, including technology, so that they can prioritise what's important to them outside of work, like family, and so that we can encourage their best talent. Each time a woman makes a decision to exclude herself from career progression, we're losing good talent. So what are we going to do about changing the system? So I certainly think the system needs to change, the way we work needs to change, so that everybody can flourish.
I like that you touched on the kind of individual woman kind of coming up with reasons or excuses as to why they didn't progress, but actually it's under this larger systemic framework, right? Of like, there's all these outside influences, we can't control those. So, you know, you've got to kind of justify it to yourself. Say, oh, well, maybe that wasn't the right role for me, that because this guy, you know, got promoted over me. So yeah, that's a really interesting kind of concept that you've touched on there. We know that your true passion is encouraging and supporting women in tech initiatives, and I'm sure all of our listeners can already tell how important this is to you. We wanted to know, what are some of the initiatives that you've helped to introduce at TradeMe or other companies you've worked at to support women in tech?
Yeah, we're doing some great work at TradeMe. I would say kudos to TradeMe for allowing this work to happen. My manager, who's also amazing, is just said, you know, so long as you get your job done, spend as much time as you like on this. So I am. So we've really looked. What I really like about the approach that we've taken is I've applied those practices that I use in my day-to-day work to diversity initiatives. So I'm kind of, when a diversity initiative is sort of like a module tacked on, you know, unconscious bias training or something like that, it's not enough. It needs to be integrated, and we need to be using the same things that we know work well to deliver our products, our services, when we think about diversity inclusion. So what we did is we looked at, where are women missing? And we looked at our data and we collected more of it, and we understood that they are missing in many parts of the process. So oftentimes people will say, a common response to there not being enough women in tech is it's a pipeline problem. Mm. There's just not enough women out there, or there's just not enough senior women out there. And I really reject that. Or at least I understand that there is less candidates to draw from. But I also understand that that's a systemic issue. Women are not encouraged, supported, and sponsored into technical leadership roles in the same way that men are. So our main outcome we're chasing is an increased percentage of women in technical leadership roles, and collecting that data is really important. So apply your initiative, see whether you move that change. If you didn't, do something different, like note that insight and then do something different. So one of the initiatives that we've taken on is sponsorship. So I think more and more companies are doing sponsorship, but just in case you haven't heard of it, what that means is that women are paired with a sponsor who is a decision maker. So somebody that is in the room when decisions are being made about the potential opportunities or progression of that woman's career. What that means is that sponsor's primary relationship is not with the woman. They're not coaching them. They're not providing unsolicited advice. Sure, they're understanding what they want from their career so that they can promote them, amplify them, boost them, defend them in the right ways. But that's about it. Most of their conversations are with other decision makers. And I do believe that it's making a difference. We haven't, as I said, haven't seen that come through in the data yet, but I'm confident it's a long-term game, you know, that we are shifting culture. And we've been able to get all of our executives have at least one woman in tech sponsored, and then some of our senior leadership team as well. And I believe that through that personal connection, they're really understanding the impact of these women not being able to progress their careers and really supporting and encouraging our system to look for ways to introduce initiatives that are going to help us to make better hiring decisions and better promotion decisions.
I really love that concept of sponsorship because I feel like it's like the opposite of the, I can't quite remember the correct name for it, but I think it's called the like me bias or similar bias or something like that. And it's where people tend to, you know, then when they think of someone who's doing a good job, they think of people who are like them or similar to them. So they're like, oh yes, this person, I think they did a really good job because they did what I would have done. And I love that with sponsorship, it's like, well, maybe this person isn't like them, but it kind of forces their sponsee to be front of mind.
Yeah, just building that understanding and that story for that person, for that decision maker. And I would say if you are a decision maker out there, well, first of all, we all have the ability to sponsor women in tech, no matter what your gender. You can take an opportunity to amplify the success, the win that that woman had. Amplify her technical skill. That's really important. So when you at Trade Me, we have the shout out channel, which is amazing. It's a really uplifting thing to look at our shout out channel. And when I see women in there, what I'm really looking for is not, you know, she organized this event, but oh my God, she, you know, she recovered this incident, or she did this amazing release, or she increased our quality of our code or something like that. So the more messaging that you can see like that, then the more those decision makers understand that that woman is technical and should be considered for promotion.
And it's interesting because when women are getting all this praise for their organisational skills or how well they manage their team, then it's kind of not surprising that a lot of women do choose to go that non-technical route if that's what they're being praised on and if that's what they're being complimented about.
That does make me think of, actually, we had another Woman in Tech initiative that Trade Me is doing to help women to be able to amplify and articulate their unique, what they stand for, and their unique contribution that they can make. We're doing a Women in Tech Development Program, and one of our Q&A panel, who's the head of security at Trade Me, Kate, mentioned the importance of choosing the tasks that you do being promotable tasks. Mm. So perhaps the next time you're about to take the notes or create the slide deck or organize a team event, just pause just a little bit longer than is comfortable for you and wait for somebody else to volunteer.
That's exactly what we talked about in episode 21, which was challenges of being a woman in tech. And we spoke about this concept of glue work. And there was actually a really interesting study done that showed that when someone is asking to do a task like writing notes or organizing an event or something like that, when there's a woman in the room, the men actually wait longer to volunteer themselves to do that compared to if there isn't a woman in the room. So there's kind of that automatic assumption that that work will fall onto women. And then obviously that sort of thing isn't the promotable tasks that you're talking about.
So we've talked about initiatives that you've worked on personally. Outside of where you're working currently, What are some initiatives that you've seen other companies successfully introduce to encourage and support women in tech?
Honestly, I think we're doing the best things. No, I really do think that things that focus on the system and those decisions are they're really important ones. So I know that there are other companies. I saw a promotion on LinkedIn for ANZ who have something like 50,000 employees who are also doing sponsorship and actually quoted the same video that we've used at TradeMe, which is by Carla Harris. Look it up. She's amazing.
We've talked a lot about systemic change and how important it is to not put the burden of, you know, changing these stereotypes for women in tech, not putting that burden on the individual woman themselves. But we are curious for people or our listeners who aren't in a position of leadership to enact change where they work on like a systemic level. What do you think we as individuals can do to empower and support women in tech or even girls considering a career in tech?
You can still do things when you feel like your power is less. You are still powerful. I mentioned before about amplifying women's achievements. You can certainly do that no matter what your position of power is. I would really encourage those small things like calling people out. Really, the next time you hear a woman talk through the reasons that they're not going to take that next step or not move into technical leadership, really ask her to stop and apply critical thought there and really consider whether those reasons are because of the system or because of her. And if they are because of the system, then perhaps ask her to work with people in power like me to see whether the system can change to allow her to progress her career.
We've also talked a lot today about women moving from those technical roles into non-technical roles and kind of this whole issue of the pipeline, where we're not doing a great job of retaining women in tech. So I wonder, what advice do you have for women who are early on in their technical journeys and are maybe considering moving out of that technical role because they've been told they're so good at organising and managing and receive praise in these other areas?
Yeah, I think it's probably something that I mentioned before. It's not a, the word we use at TradeMe, and of course I did recently, is it's a polarities. So you know when you've got a sort of binary or a black and white, really look for the thing in the middle, because it's very unusual that there's in fact maybe coding is the only case where there's real binaries. But yeah, you can do rather than a either or, do an and. So, you know, take those amazing skills that you have and apply them as you continue your technical journey.
I remember a few years ago, I think it was the United Nations did like a gender equality initiative or campaign, and the tagline of it was to use your and. And I was a teenager when that was happening. And I remember it made such a big impact on me just hearing that. Like to this day, sometimes I think to myself, you know, I need to use my and not just think it's this or this. You know, instead of that, it's and.
The other word to replace is but. So replace but with and as well, and you'll see that's quite impactful too.
I like that, like combining your skills together as opposed to saying you have to be good at one thing or good at the other. I really like that.
We're coming up to the end of our episode, so it's time to finish up with our quick fire questions, and this is the very first one. What is the best job you've had and why?
The best job I've had was a job before school, which was working in a bakery where I got free donuts and pies.
Ooh. Yum. You didn't even need to come into the tech industry. Our second quickfire question, what do you enjoy about coding?
I really like that there is a right answer and that you know when you got it right, so it doesn't give you a bug, right? So it's nice because many of the things, particularly as you become more senior in your role, there's so much nuance and subtlety and different ways to do things. It's refreshing when you. So if I really want an energy boost, I will go into a spreadsheet and do some kind of cool little formulas.
I totally relate to that. I love the instant gratification of getting something right. So next question, what is the first coding language you learnt?
It's that little turtle that I mentioned, and I thought it was Quick Basic, but I actually looked it up, and I think it was a language called Logo. But anyway, yeah, just really, I think it's based on Basic, or it became Basic.
You know, I think you might be the first person who hasn't actually answered HTML and CSS.
What do you think is the biggest strength in your career?
I think customer mindset has been a really strong theme in my career. So starting, you know, at the bakery or at the dairy where I worked as a kid, and then moving all through my career, the ability to put your shoes in,
put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Thank you. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. So really have empathy for what they need and understand the value or why you're doing the thing that you're doing.
Second to last question. What is one thing you wish you knew before you got into tech?
I think about a friend of mine who talked about learning French. So she said that you got to remember you're always bad at something before you're good at it. So don't... it's not specific to tech, obviously, but I think, if I apply it to a tech situation, and particularly for a woman in tech, and we talked about that natural aptitude thing, it's okay to be learning, to make mistakes, and eventually you'll become an expert. You don't have to be one from day one.
I love that. And our final quickfire question. What is the final piece of advice that you want to give to our listeners?
Yeah, so many things. I think for this podcast in particular, I would really encourage you to stay technical, to use your people skills to make you a better technical leader. I think it's really important for our world that if you are good at those things, that you can contribute to reducing bias by being that person that gets involved in tech and challenges the assumptions of your team and of people as they build the models that are making the assumptions that are going to decide what we see online, our preferences, what data is captured, and what our algorithms are trained on. Yeah.
And that is a wrap on our questions. Thank you so much for coming along to chat with us, Tracy. We really loved having you here.
Thank you so much, Orti and Lola. I was a bit nervous coming into this interview because I'm totally a fan. I listen to all of your episodes. I do listen to them on my bike on these cool headphones that allow you to hear the traffic as well. But it makes me ride faster. It's awesome.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. We hope you all enjoyed hearing all about Tracy's career and feel inspired to, you know, smash the patriarchy and push for systemic change in the tech industry.
Our next episode is all about object-oriented programming, and we'll be breaking down all the random jargon people use to describe it, as well as discussing one of our favorite topics, dogs. It all adds up and makes sense, I promise.
If you enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you could share it with your friends or on social media to help us spread the word and get Hot Girls Code to more wonderful women. Feel free to also leave a rating and subscribe to Hot Girls Code wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok under @hot_girls_code to keep up to date with the podcast and learn more about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech.
Thanks for listening.